artificial intelligence will completely transform our world. But what is AI? Why will it affect you? And how can you and your business survive and thrive through the AI revolution? Welcome to AI and You. Here is your host, author, speaker, and futurist, Peter Scott.
Hello, this is episode 199. At the end of February 2024, there was a landmark conference in Panama City and online, the Beneficial AGI Summit, followed by a one-day event called the Unconference. AGI, of course, standing for Artificial General Intelligence, as regular listeners to this show will know, and that representing the holy grail of AI, the development in a computer of intelligence as generally capable as a human being. And just like the actual Holy Grail, there are a number of Indiana Jones-like characters chasing it all over the world right now without having actually found anything that would unambiguously be recognized as being AGI. Our guest today is one of the organizers and sponsors of those events, Jerome C. Glenn, who has a long and storied history of pivotal leadership and contributions to addressing existential issues facing us, chief among them, the development of artificial general intelligence. He is the founder and CEO of the Millennium Project on Global Futures Research and lead author with Elizabeth Florescu and the Millennium Project team of the State of the Future Report, and 18 other State of the Future reports for the past 25 years. He was contracted by the European Community to write the AGI paper for input to their Horizon Program 2025 to 2027, is a member of the IEEE SA Organizational Governance of Artificial Intelligence Working Group P2863, and is currently working on the initial conditions, rules, and guardrails for artificial general intelligence. He has over 50 years of futures research experience working for governments, international organizations, and private industry in science and technology policy, environmental security, economics, education, defense, space, and much more. He invented the Futures Wheel, a futures assessment technique, futuristic curriculum development, and concepts such as conscious technology, trans institutions, telenations, management by understanding, and more, and coined the term futuring in 1973. He was the Washington, D.C. representative for the United Nations University as executive director of their American Council from 1988 to 2007, and has an MA in teaching social science futuristics. He was instrumental in naming the first space shuttle the Enterprise, banning the first space weapon, the Fractional Orbital Bombardment System in SALT II, and shared the 2022 Lifeboat Guardian Award with Vladimir Zelensky. He is here today to talk with us about the conferences and AGI, and I find he has a uniquely expansive and holistic view of these issues that, as I commented during the interview, reminds me of Buckminster Fuller. By the way, if you're not familiar with that name, get to a library and start reading his work. Anyway, on with the interview. Jerome Glenn, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Artificial Intelligence and You. And you're fresh off a pivotal landmark event with respect to that field, the Beneficial AGI Conference and the Unconference taking place in Panama. And for the benefit of the vast majority of our audience who didn't get to go to those, can you describe those events vividly enough to make them feel as though they have attained some part of that experience?
Well, it was a gathering of some of the more creative entrepreneurs in the field of AGI, or trying to get toward artificial general intelligence, the advanced stuff, but doing it to a large degree from a decentralized approach. So in other words, you have, by centralized approach, it would be like under a government or under Microsoft or under one category. These, as a generalization, not all of them, but several hundred folks, and there were several thousand, by the way, online. But the ones physically in Panama tended to be, not all, but tended to be, those that wanted to do the decentralized approach. how some of your computer, some of my computer can be used to develop it, like we had with the ET at home experiment, like we had with cancer experiment. We might be able to do AGI that way as well. It's an interesting approach. Another is responding to how you can have a common platform for developers working together. So it's, in a sense, it's sort of, not totally, but many of the alternative people to the current AGI main thrust.
Mm. And you're talking about implementation of AGI there, following a model like the SETI at home and folding at home projects where people rented out free of charge parts of their personal computers to be part of a distributed parallel processing network. That's very interesting because I haven't heard about that kind of project taking place elsewhere, but it's certainly a natural kind of one. So, I mean, I think the technical aspects of that are fairly well worn. What is the political, ethical, financial, everything except technical, really, reason for pursuing that avenue?
Well, first of all, I would say to your viewers, you can, I believe, get all of the presentations, the full 2 days of the regular conference online. If you just did a AGI Panama conference, something, it'll probably show up there. And they can sort of fast forward to the different ones. And there's a lot of good presentations, frankly. It was a very bright, high-end crew group on average. Now, the idea is that AGI, or artificial general intelligence, is believed by most to be the most powerful technology that we have experienced in the AI world by far. And the amount of power that that could give an individual country or an individual corporation, the theory goes, if, let's say, if you get it first, then you might be able to instruct it to stop my corporation from doing it or my country from doing it. So not that that will happen, but that's a thought. The thought is that it's too much centralized power. And so an alternative say, well, how do we decentralize that power? And that's what a lot of these people are looking at. Now, how exactly that works out? To be invented. That's what they're talking about. Mm. There's a variety of ways to do that. The large language model is not the only business in town. It's the most successful right now.
Right.
But we know in the history of technology, one approach wins for a while, then another one wins for a while, and another one wins for a while. So AGI may be in that same sort of deal, but is essentially an approach to avoid the abuse of centralized power.
But the what you described is a decentralized implementation, but I don't hear decentralized governance in that. I mean, SETI at home, folding at home were driven by a single point of control that didn't control who got to execute it, but it did get to control what they executed. And so now we're talking about governance here, which is the main motivation. How do you decentralize the governance of this?
Ah, okay. You can decentralize the development of AGI while still adhering to rules and criteria. You can still do that. It's just like if you have a decentralized think tank like the Millennium Project, we're decentralized all around the world. Mm-hmm. Unusual approach, right? But we still have sort of common standards that we work among each other. It's just like a franchise approach. You can decentralize franchise system, but you still have some standards. And I'm happy to tell you that I came to that conference in Panama with a little sense of being on guard, because here I'm talking about national governance systems and UN governance systems, which you might have thought would be the enemy. Frankly, I was well received. I mean, everybody sort of agrees, yes, we got to have some rules here. No question. Whether it's centralized, decentralized, or with extraterrestrials, you still got to have some rules.
Hmm.
And the analogy that seems to work very well for everybody is that I'm not going to tell you where to drive your car, but I am going to tell you, you got to stop at stop sign and you got to drive on one side of the street rather than the other. So in that sense, there is universal agreement that we've got to have rules. And because AGI is coming supposedly faster each time we assess it, then that means we've got to begin to almost panic now on getting those rules done. and a couple hours after speaking with you, I'll be speaking to an advisory group for the General Assembly of the United Nations. I just met yesterday at the request of the Chinese embassy. And the point that I'm making is that we're going to have to move at light speed relative to normal bureaucratic procedure. Because what happens if it happens in 2 or 3 years? How often do you create a governance agency in the UN and nation states cooperation in 2 or 3 years?
Exactly. Now, I mean, maybe this is a little cynical, but is it likely that these different governing bodies are keen to see regulation because they want to be the ones writing the rules?
That may be so, but I don't mind that motivation as long as they get to the table.
Fair enough. Now, the Millennium Project, can you introduce that to our listeners and how long that's been going, how that started, what role that fulfills at the moment?
Yeah, it started on paper, like most ideas, in 1988. And the idea was to, as a gift from our millennium then to the next millennium, was to be this fabulous global study. And I was asked to help make that happen. And I said, I want to just do one more study. What we need is a global system to create those studies. We don't have a system, a global system to do that. I mean, there's no UN think tank, believe it or not. And when people say they have a global think tank at Harvard, yeah, they got one PhD from Beijing, another one from, you know, India, and they call it a global think tank. So the idea of the Millennium Project was to create a globally dispersed system for humans to think together in some organized data way on an accumulative basis. So rather than doing a study on X and a study on Y and a study on Z, these should be accumulative. They should build on each other and build on each other, just like your brain works. You don't throw out your old information, but your new, you know, cumulative work, so that we think that futures research that we're pushing is better today than it was when we started.
Hmm. Boy, this is making me think so much and so hard of Buckminster Fuller.
Yeah, one of my heroes.
Big fan, big fan here. So when it was formed, how much a part of that picture was artificial intelligence and how has that evolved?
Well, I mean, I had written about a book called Future of Mind, Artificial Intelligence over 30 years ago. So any futurist worth their salt was aware of this stuff a long time ago. We just didn't have the all software yet. We did have the idea that we would be creating global software systems. And we had one for a little while called the Global Futures Intelligence System, which was a collective intelligence participants from around the world. But long story short, it's dead and we're going to have to recreate a new one. So anybody out there want to get involved, let me know. We got to get some funding together to make the next step. But we need, either in the UN or independent like ourselves, we need a system for humans to think together in a calm, rational, data-driven, feedback loop, intelligent way. I don't know how to say it more clearly than that. And that's what we're fostering.
And you're playing our song. I mean, that is a theme that underlies so much of what I've been doing on this show and in my work. So thank you for making that clear and providing the platform. Usually the last question I ask is, how do people get more involved in what you're doing? But I want to bring it up now because I think there's going to be a lot of dimensions to that. So let's lead with that now.
Well, we have a website, a humble website. The address is Millennium, spelled, by the way, the English way, not the French or Spanish way. It's M-I-L-L-N-N, two N's, I-U-M, and then hyphen, not underline, but hyphen, project.org. So you go on there and just look around and see what's interesting to you. Download what you want to. I think one of the buttons is how to get involved. There's a bunch of different ways people can get involved.
Terrific. Well, we'll talk about the ways that they can get involved. Now, you formed this before the internet, before it was a thing. Technically, it was a thing before. It was 1983, but...
No, I'm sorry. The paper was written in 88. But I was involved in X.25 in third world countries in 1981.
Ah, sorry, that's not where I was going.
Okay.
Yes, there were networks. There was the ARPANET before we formed the IP. But in terms of the ability to connect people on a wide scale through email and so forth, that only started emerging around 1984 through universities gradually. It didn't really take off until the commercialization in 1994. In the US. And so your ability to link people globally electronically would have been limited until that right. point. So what has that evolution of that technology meant to the way that you conduct the affairs of the Millennium Project?
Well, it meant that I could sleep in the middle of the night. Why? Because in the past, when we would send out faxes to Beijing or somewhere else in Asia, some of these organizations would only turn their fax machine on during working hours. So for me to send a fax to Beijing or somewhere else in India, I had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and feed one sheet at it. And it was slow motion then. Wow. Slowly going like this, you know, one sheet after another. Yeah, it was a lot more work and it was a lot more expensive. So it made our work easier and less costly.
So then it seems as though the formation of social media and instant connectivity would have been the fulfillment of a long-held dream with respect to how you could organize people around the world in your efforts. Now that governance of AI has become such a hot topic, especially since ChatGPT and governments have started waking up, and as Stuart Russell puts it, humanity came back into the office and took the phone off auto answer. What broadly has been the effect of that huge amount of interest and activity around AI governance on your work?
Well, it's like usually we're ahead of the conversation on stuff. All of a sudden, we're like dealing with what people are getting in the news. So it brings us a little more into the present tense. We did a study and started doing the research on, I guess, 2015 on not just AI impact on work, but also synthetic biology and other technologies as well. So like the whole range of stuff, impact. And at that time, in this, like 2017, 2015, the forecast on artificial general intelligence and FASTA was still decades out in the future. And so in that work, which is available, it's not a bad overview of the work and technology. So we did three alternative scenarios in there, detailed. Each one is 10 pages. It's not these superficial descriptions of a future condition, but how you get from here to there with cause and effect links. At that time, we were pushing the business about, people were talking about automation, getting rid of the jobs, but it wasn't like underlined three times with AI. As we started to get next into the governance issues, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this is kind of a big deal. And now the reason I'm stuttering is that, yes, it made it more electric around the world, but people still confuse artificial narrow with artificial general. And it's driving me nuts. And one of the things I like to tell your readers, the word generative AI, which abbreviates gen AI, is not general AI. Ever. The analogy that I make to make it clear to people is that IT, information technology, includes the fax machine and the internet. But how you govern them is really different. And their impact is really different. That's, to me, the sort of the scale of difference between narrow and general.
Right.
And that's not there. I mean, you read the White House statement on AI. You read the UN resolution that just was put in by the U.S. You read the European Union's new AI law. You read the Chinese law. They don't bring the sense of the emergency of AGI. Mm. They say, here's how we do AI, as if AI is all of that stuff. But they don't make the distinctions. And the way that they talk about governance is terribly naive in the following way. You'll see phrases say, well, like, we'll design it to keep up with. You can anticipate, like we do, but you can't keep up with it, because if you're going with it, it's going to go much faster than your brain can go. Come on, faster than bureaucrats. Now, we can think ahead and we can intervene. And that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to come up with governance systems for AGI before it's here. So it's like an anticipatory governance system. That we can do, but keeping up with it is hopeless.
Wow. I'm really enjoying this. We've had lots of discussions of AGI on the show, lots of discussions of AI governance, but this one is landing in the intersection of those much more squarely than anything else. And I really want to dig into this. Now, I mean, we would still need AI governance even if AGI never happened, which obviously is not on the right. cards, but even if it right. didn't, there is transformative impact of narrow artificial intelligence.
Yep.
And it's probably been easier for bodies like the EU to wrap their brains around that than AGI, which suffers from a very nebulous definition that, at least the ones we've heard, that is not something you can operationalize, I would say. Not when you're saying it's AI that can do general tasks like a human. Every time we try and conduct a test measuring that, it's no good because it's too specific and therefore you can build a narrow AI to pass it easily. What's your answer to that, since your work depends upon knowing when we have this?
Yeah. Well, one would be narrow to me is a tool. We give it the prompts. We give it the large language models. We give it the training. We do all that sort of stuff. General is more like an agent. It means some people say, like some people at Panama conference will say, you know, that it will be conscious, it will be sentient, it will be self-aware. I'm going like, I don't know about that part, but I'll say this. It will act as if. Your ChatGPT does not act as if it's sentient, but not much. But when you have an AGI that acts as a sentient being, it might say, that prompt is stupid. Here's a better idea. Now, chat doesn't do that to you. It sort of like takes your stuff and says, yes, sir, and does it. It's a tool. But artificial general intelligence, to me, is not only an actor in that sense that it initiates it, but it also rewrites its own code and gets smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter. So it's not just dependent on some language model.
Mm-hmm.
It's dependent on responding to its environment that it's more aware of than narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then can correct and learn and learn and learn and go faster. And also, there may be many artificial general intelligences, and they might start talking to each other. And they're going to get smarter as they talk to each other. Just like you and I teach each other different things, we get smarter. So imagine AGIs proliferating, talking to each other, and emerging into a super intelligence.
Mm.
Whoa, beyond our control. And that, by definition, beyond our control. So to me, the reason there's excitement in my voice is because how that emerges to super, to me, is dependent upon how we create the general to begin with and the protocols and rules between the AGIs. That we can control. How super emerges, we can't. The analogy I use is like bringing up kids. In narrow intelligence, it's like the kid in diapers. You tell them when to eat, when to sleep. You know, you're in charge. Teenagers, general, you have a little negotiation going on here. General's beyond your control. So when the kid grows up, you hopefully have trained it well, you've nurtured it well, then that's where we are now.
Hmm.
And some AGI guests, maybe you've had on, will say alignment of human values and AGI may be impossible by the time we have to do it. But we got to try. That's my attitude. It may be. I would say that this is the most difficult management question we've ever faced.
Right. And yes, we just had Roman Yampolsky on the show again and very much talking about the alignment questions. I like right. that you brought up about children, because one of the distinctions that there seems to me to be between today's large language models and a true general intelligence is that they are expert in so many topics. It's like having a grad student in everything. But unlike a grad student, if you then try to teach it something new, that mechanism for increasing its intelligence in a different direction isn't there. It's an expert on everything, but I know people will hedge on this, and we have to always hedge when it comes to the large language models, because you can produce various kinds of demonstrations that look like it's doing everything. But it seems to me that they are not capable of being educated to learn new things in the way that I can sit an undergraduate in front of a professor and see some progress. Am I on the right track there? Because I'm heading towards how do we know when we have AGI?
We know when it gets smarter the next time we've used it.
Mm.
We know that it sets up some goals or sub-goals we never thought about before. Like, let's say you say to AGI, solve the Middle East problem. And it comes back and says, okay, here are all the treaties that have been related to it so far. Here are the weak points, here's the strong points. And here are the 80 actors in the game and experts. I called them up all last night and I've got the consensus and here's some decisions. So we set up some sub goals. Like I didn't tell it to go call out people. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, go solve the problem. So the AGI is more like a sentient being. Again, whether it's sentient or not, I'm not going to walk into that right now, but it certainly will act as if it's sentient. That would be one of the key. It's an actor. It's, mm-hmm. not, it's a partner. It's going to come up way beyond its original programming. And if it needs to learn something, like, for example, the calling up the experts in the Middle East, first of all, it can use narrow intelligence, who those experts are. Then it's got to get the email addresses that tell you to get them. And then, of course, it develops its own voice. It sounds very commanding and then makes the phone calls and passing the Turing test. And then there it can interview, like call you up or something like that. Say, what do you think? When it can do those kinds of things and you get the sense that you're dealing with another species that happens to be more intelligent than humans and gorillas, then I'd say, yeah, that's what that to me would be one of the criteria.
And it seems that we are already encroaching in that space. It's like the future is already here, but it's not evenly distributed in that there are advances being made that check some of the boxes that you just drew there. For instance, there was a celebrated case of ChatGPT, I think, asking a human to solve a captcha for it so that it could accomplish some task, and even in the process, lying about why it wanted it to achieve that. And so that demonstrates some of those agentic qualities there, which is something that a huge amount of research and development is going on in right now, because as you've identified, a lot of the value from AI will come from it acting as an agent and going off and doing things and not simply sitting there like a bump on a log until we ask it a question. Whenever we bring up or think about things like AI rewriting its own code, going off and doing things that we didn't envision as part of the goals we gave it, people's fear meters start to tick up. What do you do about that?
Well, we put together the rules today, just to give you a little slice where that is. There was a meeting last September, October, in Montevideo, Uruguay, of parliamentary representatives from 70 countries. And they agreed to begin to write rules, laws. This is where the rubber hits the road, because in other words, there's a government. Well, parliaments have got to pass a law, you know, they can set up an agency and so forth. So they claim that they're going to start doing that and comparing notes. And the Interparliamentary Union agreed that they are going to help this happen. I don't know how much progress has been made. It's on my to-do list to follow up on. But that's one part of the dance. Another part of the dance is the Secretary General of the UN has already said, I accept the idea of creating a UN agency for AI. At a Security Council meeting of the UN last June or July. And he set up a group to work on it. And they came out with a bunch of nice generalizations that did not come up with an emergency at all that I thought should be there. But it's in motion slowly. So in any case, and then right after this, I'll give a little talk to the UN General Assembly, the advisory group. So it's popping up. It's beginning to move a bit, a little bit here and there. The U.S. and China agreed at the San Francisco meeting to have a group work together. The Financial Times, to me, is the only source on this, but the Financial Times said there are secret meetings between China and the United States to begin to coordinate. And just before the U.N. Security Council meeting and just before the Blatchley meeting, the one in the U.K. as well. I don't know if they're still going on. I was asked to be in the Chinese embassy yesterday, and where we talked about the idea of a joint resolution between the United States and China to create a convention. Well, first to create a working group to create a convention. Then the convention would then set the rules for creating a UN multi-stakeholder agency. That's another thing, by the way. We're doing a three-part study on OSR. The second part of the study is on the rules and how the rules would be created, what kind of an organization would be there. Everybody, including the folks down in Panama, everybody likes this idea of a multi-stakeholder institution. So it wouldn't be just a UN conventional agency like the International Atomic Energy Agency of countries on the board, but it would be a mix of players, the system to be invented. And that idea that it's got to be a different thing and to be invented seems to be the majority view at the moment. So that's at least intellectually, there's progress on this. Now we got to get it into resolutions in the General Assembly.
Wow. And that's exploring a world that we haven't touched on much of this international politicking for creating these kind of outcomes. A lot of people in the US think of the UN as being irrelevant these days. What would you say to change their mind with respect to this issue?
Well, how'd you like to have no international agreements on air traffic control? Like to have the Somalia of airlines on it? How would you like to have no standards on notification on viruses without the World Health Organization? World powers in the past, they think they're the only thing in town. So it's not an unusual thing for the United States to have that attitude. But this is ignorant. When you do look at the poll data in the United States, consistently for at least many, many years, the majority, not plurality, but the majority of Americans polled say there should be either increased support for the UN or keep the same amount of support for the UN. Some of the right-wing wackos that don't like the UN are loud. That doesn't mean they're not the majority. And when you get into an airplane, you're, you know, whether you know it or not, you're there at the good graces of the UN because you have food going from different places around the world and all kinds of different stuff. Postage. During the Vietnam War, we could send letters to North Vietnam because of the UN. So we have to have some international standards. Now, how those things get done is nation states. People don't understand. The UN simply is like the common denominator for folks, collaboration. Countries are still running the show. So it's like the International Atomic Energy Agency. Imagine if we had no International Atomic Energy Agency. How many dirty bombs would have gone off by now? How much nuclear material would have been smuggled by now? You're going to let your imagination go. All right. Now, the implementation is still nation states. So the same thing with this. You have a UN body up here, multi-stakeholder body, rather not just nation states, but it gets developed in cooperation with what's happening nation state level. And that's where we're pushing. You can do two at the same time. This has got to be done fast. We have done at the same time so that as nation states put together their drafts and compare, we share that with the UN agency. As the UN agency sort of got, that gets straight draft, you go back and forth and back and forth to get a coherent system. I don't know how else to describe it. That's the way to
that's
go.
That's good. And thank you. You made that alive. That's the end of the first half of the interview. Next half, next week. I very much appreciated getting the view from Jerome of how these governance issues of AGI are being engaged at the international level, because it's not a view that gets that much press. That's dominated by what the multinational corporations are doing, your Googles and Facebooks. But Jerome shows us that there's a lot going on behind the scenes in the halls of the UN and makes available this group, the Millennium Project, for everyone to get involved. Look for the Millennium Project online, with links in the show notes and transcript, to find out more about how you can get involved. For instance, David Wood, chair of the London Futurists, who's been on this podcast twice, is the co-chair of the UK node of the Millennium Project and was in Panama with Jerome. In today's news, ripped from the headlines about AI, DeepMind has created a system called Alpha Geometry. They're obviously dedicated to getting mileage out of the alpha prefix after AlphaGo thrust them into the headlines. This system can solve complex geometry problems at a level approaching that of a gold medalist in the International Mathematical Olympiad, which is exactly what its name implies, an International Olympic Games-like competition of mathematics. Footnote, not affiliated with the actual Olympic Games in any way. In their paper published in Nature, they showed how Alpha Geometry solved 25 of 30 Olympiad geometry problems within the competition time limit. The average human gold medalist solves 25.9 problems. The previous state-of-the-art AI was only able to solve 10. This is where we have to seriously attribute AIs with the ability to perform reasoning, because the label is simply, it passes the duck test, okay? Quacks, walks, looks like reasoning. Alpha Geometry is described as a neurosymbolic system. Now, that is a great term. I want to find an excuse to work that in more often. Made up of a neural language model and a symbolic deduction engine, which work together to find proofs for complex geometry theorems. Akin to the idea of thinking fast and slow, one system provides fast, intuitive, in quotes, ideas, and the other more deliberate, rational decision-making. This is pretty impressive, because you may have heard me talk on the show before about how it seems as though we need ways of doing both kinds of computation in AI, the intuitive processing that is the hallmark of large language models and other generative AI, and the rational, logical, symbolic processing that is the hallmark of computers from day one and the original good old-fashioned AI. And here we see something demonstrating how to merge both of those together. As I said, pretty impressive. Next week, we'll conclude the interview with Jerome C. Glenn when he'll talk about approaches for actually controlling the development of AGI that were developed at the conference, the AI arms race, and why he doesn't like the term futurism. That's next week on AI and You. Until then, remember, no matter how much computers learn how to do, it's how we come together as humans that matters.
That's all for this episode of AI and You. Please leave a rating and comment and share with your friends. Get the book, Artificial Intelligence and You, and see more videos and articles at aiandyou.net. That's aiandyou.net, where you can also send us your questions. Thank you for listening.